Juice Box is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Dropped into Juice Box Radio, where sexuality educators quench your search for responsible, progressive sexuality over your lifespan. In Juice Box Radio on CITR 101.9 FM with your fabulous hosts, Julia Saunders and Caroline McGillivray. Or maybe you're one of our online listeners tonight at CITR.ca. If you ever miss a show, you can always download one of our fresh podcasts at juiceboxradio.com. Anyway, you've come to join us tonight, we're glad to have you. Tonight's Juice Box is all about making choices about parenting. Do you want to parent or not? And if you do decide to parent, how do you work out the wide variety of conditions and expectations to shared parenting? I think when you're single parent, things get a little easier. How, in some ways, anyway, this decision-making and all that kind of thing gets easier. How will having babies or parenting affect your romantic or your sex life? We'll talk about that a little bit tonight as well. But mostly we're going to be talking about making one of the biggest decisions you will ever have to make in your life. And we'll be taking calls, so feel free to call in and contribute to the conversation at 604-822-2487. That is 604-UBC-CITR.
Decision making.
Yes.
It's a big one to parent or not to parent. That is the question.
Mm-hmm.
And many of us are faced with this very complex and huge decision, while there's other people who just do it without really thinking about the pros and cons involved. But whatever your choice is, it should be done for important reasons and not just a knee-jerk reaction to biological or social urge. Having a family should be a lifelong commitment. And the biggest consideration should really be how the kid is going to fare in your life if you're its mom or dad.
So, yeah, I mean, is the child actually going to fare well if you're its parent? So that's a really big decision, a consideration anyway. But, you know, I think for some, having a baby, they say, is the best thing that has ever happened to them. And it gives them a reason to live stronger than any other reason they've ever found. And it gives people, like you were saying, Caroline.
It gives them a reason to straighten out their lives.
Yeah, and I do know a lot of people that said, you know, I was this crazy wild partier. Like, I had, like, you know, not a lot of things going on in my life that really meant anything until I had, you know, Max, the baby, or whatever her name might be. All right, so, but there's lots of other pros, and Caroline and I kind of made a little list here of our own pros that we could think of. And not all of them are necessarily positive, but there are reasons that people cite for saying yes to having babies.
And there are other ones that we got from friends and family that we asked.
Mm-hmm. So I think the obvious of fulfilling that biological urge is kind of strong for most people. And
definitely.
A reason that people say yes, they would.
Passing on your values to the next generation within your family.
Yeah, you know, like, values are, we all think, are really important, and that's what guides our ethics and who we are. And so, you know, if we feel really strongly about something, we think, well, we want more people like them in the world, like myself, you know. So you end up wanting to continue your gene pool or pass on your values. Even if you don't like your family, you know, our egos often want us to replicate ourselves. And this can be sort of one of the biggest all-consuming feelings or urges to procreate and to have a baby. And so big reasons for those ones, for sure.
Huge. And if you're in a relationship, a child can be one of the most romantic, most powerful, beautiful uniting of you and someone else, someone that you love. Mm-hmm. And that definitely brings you together for a lifetime, much more than marriage or any other commitments.
And if you think about it, like this romantic notion of like splitting your genes and wrapping them around each other to create something new, a combination of the two of you. I mean, this is probably the biggest expression of love that I could possibly imagine and incredibly romantic. So definitely a pro. I think the biggest pro in my eyes personally.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was an interesting one. The possibility of having some care for you later on in life.
Which you were saying, and your dad said today, that, you know, isn't necessarily a guarantee. And even though my father constantly says, you better take care of me later in life, it's not a guarantee anymore. And there's lots of, as we know, from retirement communities and you know, assisted living and all the rest of it, that we aren't really expected to take care of our parents anymore in this day and age, although that's not the truth for a lot of different cultural values and different cultures that don't feel that way, and they all live together in the same house.
Which we'll be talking about a little bit more later on.
Oh, yes. And then I think, you know, this one I kind of came up with around because some of my friends that were single parents or, you know, really maybe in their 40s and deciding they're definitely going for having a child is because they feel like they've had kind of a lonely life, and they wanted to share their life with somebody. They wanted company, they wanted connection and a playmate or a life mate for, you know, at least 14 years or more until the kid starts to say, I'm out of here. So, you know, that was one of the reasons that somebody gave for having children.
I think this is an interesting one, someone that you can control.
Yes.
At least for the early years.
But well, I can only think of a few people in my life as parents that are control freaks, and they really get off on controlling people and things. And so as the children get older, they just have more puppies. Anyway, they just get another dog. So, you know, anyway, so I think that's something. I don't know. I think people can be controlling, and they want to have someone that they can boss around.
And children can be amazing teachers and a reflection to you.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's what, you know, my friend Mike said to me last night. He's like, you know, I think that my child has been the biggest teacher that I've ever had in my life about who I am and how I respond to the world and like how I was parented and all the mess ups that happened to me and how I don't want to do that in the future to my child. So it really, you know, has made me think a lot. And I, you know, as a, I'm not a parent, but this is speaking to parents. They say these things, and it definitely can. I put that in the pros list. I put that in as a reason for yes. And a little one that I, you know, as a sex educator, the thing that comes up for me is that when you're pregnant as a woman, it actually makes you incredibly horny and you're much more orgasmic. And that's because of all the nerve mappings that start to happen in your vulva and in your vaginal area and your whole pubic area. A whole bunch more blood vessels start to grow down there, enabling you to prepare your body for growing the baby, but also delivering vaginally. And after you have a vaginal delivery, a lot of women cite that they have way better, way stronger orgasms, way more easily. And to be honest with you, that's what the creation of the G-spot is all about, was for actual vaginal delivery. It's like a morphine pump. So as you push down on the G-spot, which is why it's located so in such an awkward position to actually access sexually, it's for what they say, the delivery orgasm. So it's like a morphine pump to help with your pain as you have childbirth. And, you know, the G-spot's not actually... I mean, you need a hook, and you need to, like, really... The access isn't... No, and there's no penis that's really shaped that way. So Mother Nature made the G-spot for the concept of helping you deliver your baby vaginally more pleasurably and more pain-free, but also orgasmically.
So with that...
You can Google delivery orgasm.
I was just more curious in terms of the oxytocin, and maybe that's
that
one
too?
Of the reasons why babies bond with their mothers so well. Right away, where the mother falls in love because of that huge orgasmic thing.
Yes, we and have a lot of the morphine running in our bodies, a lot of oxytocin when after you've delivered a baby, mm-hmm. for sure, vaginally. Absolutely. It's a huge bond that happens, and that's a big part of it, for sure. It also helps you with the milk, getting the shooting of the milk, the ejaculation. It's good old ejaculation. Okay, so now we have cons. Mm-hmm. So decision-making, to parent or not to parent, there's a lot of cons. I'd say for some people...
Sacrifice is a huge one. That's probably the biggest one.
It's so far-reaching. I mean, there's so much sacrifice to having a child. Like
financial, sexual,
freedom
in stereo.
Time.
Romantic connection.
Yeah, like you end up, like you lose your relationship over having babies.
Oh, your body.
You lose your body. I mean, I don't know how many women, like our bodies just go to shit. Like it's just terrible.
Although apparently you can have better orgasms.
Yes, I guess.
If you have the energy to have them.
The vulva starts to, it works better for you. But also energy level for anything else is totally diminished. I mean, there's a huge amount of sacrifice to having a child or children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a thankless job. I mean, kids aren't asked to be born. They don't owe you anything. And you don't deserve to make them feel like being nice to you. They don't have, they can be respectful, yes, but they didn't ask to be born. You know, and kids can be pretty cruel to their parents, especially these days. Parents are way too easy on their kids. Like, my mother was so hardcore on being respectful to her. And we were pretty good to her until we were in our teens. Or maybe she'd like to say something else about that. Mom, if you're listening, which, of course, I know you're not. You never have listened to a single one of my shows. But I know you would be calling me and going, wait a minute, wait, you were giving me shit from the time you were six. Anyway.
If my mother was still alive, she'd say I was definitely giving her a hard time from birth. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Those terrible twos and right up from there.
And then there's the huge responsibility, right? Like, I mean, it's the biggest responsibility you could possibly have, another person's life.
Taking care of another human being, definitely.
Lord. And totally screwing them up. Like, that's the thing I'm scared most about. Because if you have a screwed up kid, it's quite often to do with how bad you were as a parent. It's not necessarily that the child was, mentally unstable, and that can happen. Mm-hmm. And some of us are born with pretty nasty personalities, just just bitter little things, and that can happen. But it's very rare. I mean, most children are pretty good-natured, and if they have they're sensitive, you can still raise them well, so they don't turn out to be messed up too bad. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like when you see a messed up kid or youth, it's pretty much a parenting issue. So it's like. Responsibility of like how that's going to reflect on you. Ooh. Anyway,
that's a rather daunting thing.
Yeah, another con to having a child.
And the other thing is fear of loss. If they get sick or if they die.
Oh my God.
Worrying about every time they go over to somebody's house. Are they going to come home again?
Just accidents, killing most young boys. Mm-hmm. Most car accidents that kill people. It's young
pedophiles.
Boys. My brother's carrying the organs of an 18-year-old with a car accident in his body. You know, it just happens. Like, it's mm-hmm. so common that, your boys just don't make it past 18. And then career.
Career.
Like, it seems impossible. There's a bunch of blogs that I kind of check in and belong to, ChickNet and stuff, and these women are asking, is it even possible to have a career and to have a family? And every successful woman that I know has not had any children. Like, they're fine. You know, it's one of the parents has to suffer their career. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's almost inevitable. And usually it's a woman because she has to take at least a year out if she wants to breastfeed. And most of us realize that breastfeeding is pretty critical, so, to the health of the child and long term and whatever. And there's like, yeah, it's like your career's got to be put on hold for a year. And for if you're high up or you're self-employed or, you know, you're a CEO or something, you're not going to, you're like a lawyer in some firm. I know some lawyer friends of mine that are like, they gave up on the career finally, the career track, because mm-hmm. they really wanted to have a child and it seems impossible to have both. So that's a con. That's a big con to the consideration factor on that. And it's one that's starting to make me feel a little bit less scared. Child going into the children world, because I've spent 10 years studying for so long and building this career that I think is really important. Mm-hmm. You know, and the more I teach, I've been doing a lot of teaching in the last month or so, and the more I realize how important sex ed is and just the policy changes I want to make, and that means a lot of government moving up in that and a lot of things to consider. Is it possible for me to have a child and still continue that career track? I don't know.
That's one of those things we've got to really think about.
Lots of things to consider, yes.
But
so I did a little research into sort of just wanting to see kind of if you are in a relationship and this person and you are considering having a child together, I thought there's some really important things to consider in your decision to having a baby or to parent or not. Even if you're just like really want to have babies, and you see these ads out there that are like, you know, I want to have children, let's get together and talk about it. Within 6 months, these people are having children. Like, or, you know, you're thinking of getting married and you're thinking about having a child with somebody. I looked at this Dr. Joanne Baum, PhD. She wrote a book called Got the Baby, Where's the Manual? But she says that there's a lot to having you or your spouse or your partner consider whether you should be parents or not. Are you bowing to social pressures? Have you two talked about what being a parent might mean to each of you? You know, maybe you don't have similar beliefs. Maybe your expectations aren't the same. Or what hopes do you have of raising a child and being parents together? So she says that there's 6 questions to ask yourself before making this critical decision of should you or should you not become parents.
Do we want or need to be parents to have a full and vital life as adults together? That's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. What does parents mean? What does being parents mean to us? Do we have what it takes to be great parents?
And I'd say often a lot of people don't. My feeling, there's a lot of people who should not be having children out there.
It's true, but there's a lot of people who probably should as well.
Yes, like us.
Chose to. Perhaps. I think we both have to start dating first, but that's a whole other story.
Dating men that want to. Yes. Another show. Another show, another day.
Another Caroline and Julia show.
Another Caroline and Julia show, that's right. But yeah, so, and also Dr. Joanne Baum asks, how would you define your roles as mom and dad? Because some people might have different ideas of that.
And asking your partner, what do you expect of me? Mm-hmm. In terms of that, you may have your own role defined in terms of being a parent, but what does your partner think? Mm-hmm. And what do they expect of you? That's really, really important to talk about. And that goes into how do we want to operate as a parenting team?
Right. And, Dr. Baum says, do you realize that most people become parents without thoroughly discussing how each was raised?
Yes.
And how you intend or fantasize or desire to raise your child. They just assume, well, it'll work once the kid is here. But then you run into problems like, what do you mean? You want me to give up my golf because it takes me away from home for 5 hours and you and the baby are left alone? Or what do you mean we can't still go out every week because we can't afford a babysitter and the baby needs us, but we can still afford your golf game, right? Or like, what do you mean you don't want to spank the baby when she's bad? You know, people don't talk about these things beforehand.
And they need to. It's really important. Adults becoming parents make a lot of assumptions, usually based on the fantasy. It's going to work out, and we'll naturally agree and do this well. And when those fantasies don't work out, and you don't even know where to begin to start communicating about the differences of what you're seeing, because you're so upset, because your wonderful partner has let you down, and not just you, the partner's letting you and the baby down, and you often wonder, why didn't I see this before? And the answer is twofold. The answer is because, A, you never looked, you never discussed, and you never shared ideas and expectations, and B, because you're blinded by your fantasies and your assumptions. So there's a lot of things that new parents can do.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is to stop blaming each other and forgive each other for not knowing enough to discuss things. Because even as Dr. Baum says, it's like, where's the manual, you know? It's not like the babies come out of your womb with like a manual saying, mm-hmm. this is exactly how I want to be raised, exactly like this. You've got to kind of go trial and error, and each child is different.
Mm-hmm. And She suggests that you discuss your childhoods, how you were raised, and how you want to be different from your what your family did with you. And mm-hmm. And then she's also saying listen to each other with the ears that allow you to respect what the other person's saying. You don't need to be right. She has a lot of really good suggestions. Admitting to each other that there's not enough hours in the day or week to get all your needs and wants met, and to prioritize these things. So prioritize how much each of your needs and your baby's needs and your needs can be met while understanding and accepting that wants may have to wait. But it's important that these wants are not 18 years until your child goes to college, because you're both going to end up really bitter.
And remembering that you're married, that the marriage and the partnership came first, then the baby carriage, and figure out ways you can nurture each other and give yourselves important attention so that the couple in you stays alive as your baby thrives, and you have to have fun together.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoy the challenge. It's sometimes frightening, and there's some wonderful journeys as parents, but try and do it together, being mutual learners, and being mutual learners with your kid,
mm-hmm.
and really keep an open mind.
Right, because you don't have to have all the answers. But you do need to consider the questions together and take timeouts when you're upset to calm down and figure out rationally how you'd want to react. And really that she suggests that you know that there aren't any rule books to follow. Everything can be even more challenging as well when you're lacking sleep, Caroline. So you're both going to be lacking sleep. So just remember,
it's going to be okay.
And it's okay to learn as you go. And if you have a partner who's willing to learn with you, you're not going to feel so alone. You're going to do a better job at it. So decision-making about having a child or not. Some people decide to not have children. And making this decision to have or to not have children is one of the most personal choices that you're ever going to make in your life. And it's a decision that should take a lot of thought, because whatever your choice is, there's lifelong repercussions, as we're saying. But it is up to you.
Having a child can bring some of the greatest joys. There's days of laughter, a life of happiness, a sense of purpose. It can also bring nights of worries, days of frustration, and years of heartache. And this is also true with the emotions you can feel if you choose not to have a child. It's a decision that's going to affect the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And it will keep coming back. You know, even if you decide not to have a child, you know, as you turn 50 and 60, there's still, you know, people will talk about their grandchildren and this and that, or like their kids coming to see them and bringing out Christmases and all that. And
who's going to take care of you when you're old?
Yeah, there's just a lot of things that you have to consider, and it is going to affect your entire life. But the decision, of course, is your own, whether or not to have children. You know, but I think it's interesting that lots of people think they need to give their input.
Yes, we hear it all the time from our families, don't we, Jules?
Yes, it's like, where are my grandchildren, you know? Or if you're married or you're in a relationship, people are even more like expecting, well, why'd you get married then? Why are you, you've been together for X number of years. Come on, where's our kids? What are you going to do next?
Why don't you want children?
Yeah, you know, and it's...
You're going to regret it later on. I do. Kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I know some people that haven't had children. They're incredibly successful and very happy, and they're very free, and they get to travel the world, and they have lots of money, and, you know, they have lots of fun with their partner, and they have a romantic life. So, you know, there's also that.
I agree. And then there's the other people who regret it and wish to goodness that they did it earlier on.
And, you know, if you're married or you're in a relationship, this decision that, of course, is going to have to be worked out together. But your long-term partner is the only person who should actually have equal say, you know, because well-meaning parents might be asking or pressuring you to give them grandchildren, and telling you that you've decided not to have children can be really hard to tell your parents. But you should never have children because someone else wants you to, obviously. And that includes your partner. If your partner really wants you to and you really don't want to, you can just tell them. If people are pressuring you, whoever it is, about asking you to have them, if you don't feel like you have to justify your reasons, because you don't, you can just tell them you decided not to. Or if it's easier, you can just tell them that you're still thinking about it, and you can leave it at that.
Yeah, and don't let anybody tell you that you're being selfish by not deciding to have children. It's your decision, and you have that right to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And even without children, you can still be nurturing. There's some women who have never thought for a moment that they wouldn't be mothers when they grew up. They pictured themselves with their husbands, the homes, the pitter-patter of little feet. But as we all know, our childhood fantasies don't always come true when we grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Life happens, we get into our careers, our relationships, our lives, and some of us just decide that having kids is not going to work.
Yeah. So, you know, if you decide not to have children, remember that women especially are very nurturing by nature. And whether that means taking care of your children or your job or something else, we can still feel fulfilled. So if you choose not to have children, or in some cases if you can't, there's nothing wrong with that. So remember, leave children, raising children to those who choose to do this, and be confident that she made the right decision for you.
And maybe your life can be deeply fulfilling without your own family to care for. And the question is this possible? I think so. We've got pretty fulfilling lives, don't you think so, Jules?
Mm-hmm.
And
it's just going to get better.
It is. It's going to get really, really wonderful. But it's...
As I make money. And don't have to spend it on children.
Exactly. So if you see that sweater that you bought last week and you want to buy 3 more of them, you can do that instead of thinking you have to go out and buy diapers instead.
I just want to go traveling. But, you know, an idea, like if you're trying to figure out if your life is going to have enough meaning to it, an idea would be to talk to some people in your life who've chosen not to have children. Make sure the people that you really respect to see how they feel about their decision and their future also that they're looking at without a family. Make sure that, you know, you choose people you respect, as I said. But you can also see a counselor or a life coach about this decision, and that's recommended. We're going to talk
to about that on the second half of the show.
Yeah, we're going to talk to a life coach in the second half of the show. Okay, I'm going to talk some more. Also, an idea is to talk to parents of all kinds and have them reflect on what they have experienced in their lives so far with their children. And this may actually serve to confuse you a little bit because ultimately the decision is very personal. But it might help you build your pros and cons list because the ones that Caroline and I went over earlier in the show may not really fill all of your pros or all of your cons for yourself because, again, it's a personal choice.
And once it's been mapped out and well-researched and considered, take a really deep, deep look in your heart. And what does it tell you? More importantly, why do you feel this way? And really deeply explore your reactions and feelings to the idea of kids or no kids. You might be surprised about the reasons you feel the way you do. Like maybe you had a really bad childhood, for example. And you feel that you don't deserve to become a parent. And maybe that might not be the case. That might be worked through counseling.
Or your reasons for wanting to have a child might be that you are wanting to fulfill some kind of inner deficiency or that you're really lonely in your life and, you know, there's something wrong in your life. Something's missing. So you think a child is going to fill that. Well, that's a really bad reason to have a child.
Or because you want to be like Britney Spears' sister who just had a baby.
Yeah.
The trendy thing.
Right. So
buy a dog. Actually, don't.
If you want to have a family, but you're looking at alternatives to biological parenting, there's always adoption. Just wanted to mention there's foster parenting. There's advanced technologies like in vitro fertilization or storing your eggs or sperm and paying someone later to carry it if you come to be 50 and you want to have a baby and your womb is dried up. And this is also...
Use lube.
This is something that can work for homosexual couples as well, the advanced technologies, but it is expensive. I think we have to get going on a little break.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So raising a family, of course, whether single or coupled, can be full of wonderful aspects, but it's also complex issues. And for many people these days, blended family structures increases the potential issues. What if there's an occasion where you fall in love with someone who has a child and you become an instant parent? The older you get in life, like Caroline, you and I, you might be starting to date people who already have children. Step-parenting is increasing in commonality, and many don't know where to begin to do step-parenting effectively. Stay tuned to an interview with Robert Allen to see what answers he offers to the complexity of step-parenting after the break. You're listening to Juicebox on CITR Radio 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Do keep that dial locked, and we welcome your calls during this time especially. So call in at 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR, and we will be right back.
Oh, while tearing off a game of golf. I may make a play for the caddy, but when I do, I don't follow through, 'cause my heart belongs to daddy. If I invite a boy some night to dine on my fine thing and hattie, I just adore his asking for more, but my heart belongs to daddy. Yes, my heart belongs to daddy. So I simply couldn't be bad. Yes, my heart belongs to daddy. Dad, 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 dad. So I want to warn you, laddie, though I know that you're perfectly swell, that my heart belongs to daddy. 'Cause my daddy, he treats it so
Juicebox, the sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Thank you for stopping that. If you actually want to learn more about weather, join the UBC Storm Club. For more information, email us at stormubc@gmail.com. Stop playing those cheesy songs and tune into News 101 Mondays and Fridays for your CITR weather forecast.
Juicebox is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
And we are back.
That was some funny engineering.
That was great with the Marilyn Monroe.
It's perfect. That was Marilyn Monroe.
My heart belongs to daddy.
That's right. And just before we get to our fabulous interview with Robert Allen calling up from California, we are going to be doing a quick little juiceberry about Kundalini Dance, a three-part sacred alchemical sexuality workshop for women, May 14th. That's next Wednesday, the 21st, and June 9th in Vancouver. Reclaim your power, open your body as love, and integrate positive life change. Find out more at kundalinidance.com, and that's kundalini-dance.com. And then also some friends of mine, of course, shameless promoting, but because it is Night of the Sultan, and it's exotic Middle Eastern beats, and there is some harem dancers. So
ooh,
because it's sexy, sexy dance party night, and that's May 22nd at the Red Room, you can find out more at beatswithoutborders.com. So those are our little juice berries, and now we want to introduce Robert Allen. He's an integrative life coach and many other things, but tonight he is wearing that hat and he's calling in from California. From his website, it reads, imagine who you want to be, imagine who you know you are, imagine the change you can create. Robert is new to step parenting, but not new to aspects of the new family, from poly families to blended families to shared living to tribal systems et al. Welcome, Robert Allen. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much. You two are hilarious, I have to say that. That was the most fun I've had in a half hour.
Oh, are we? Okay, get up. So we're talking funny about serious topics as well, so you should hear us when we're on a topic we like. I mean, this is just a really, like, you know, close to the heart kind of an intense topic, but...
Absolutely, that's what makes it so good.
Thank you, Robert. Well, I didn't get a chance to chat. I didn't get the pleasure of chatting with you earlier, so can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Of course. Currently, I'm a tantra teacher and an integrative life coach, and I'm working on a book called The Spy in the House of Love about the American tantric movement.
Mm. It's called what?
A Spy in the House of Love.
Okay, wow.
It should be done very soon.
Cool title.
And historically, my career started as a mental health therapist and an alcohol and drug counselor.
Oh, cool.
And I did that for over a decade, but my experience was it was amazing work and amazing people and a powerful system, and it's so necessary. But for me personally, I found that there was a lack of conversations around sexuality and spirituality, mm-hmm. and I wanted to move to something else. So I moved into teaching tantra and then coaching, which includes, it's the reason I do integrative life coaching, is because it includes not only body, mind, and spirit, but more specifically sexuality, spirituality, people's job, if they have kids, if they have a family, what their family systems are, trying to kind of incorporate every part of their life and their plan about how they want to move forward.
Cool.
Which is great. That kind of leads us into our next question. We want to ask you if you had somebody who's coming up, because one of the things we talked about in the first half was if,
making this decision is a hard one.
It's a huge one, to have kids or not to have kids, and to and book an appointment with a life coach. So what type of process would you be guiding somebody through if they called you up, a couple, and said that they, or even a single person, and said that they were debating whether or not to have children or not to?
Well, I think it would depend on a number of things, and their current life experience would be really important. Like, if they were younger folks.
Okay.
Sometimes when people are younger, outcomes are a little less known. I mean, I'm 42, so I'm young. But at 18, you assume, you know, there's a little more peach and cream attitude about life, and having a child at that age, especially these days, is really difficult financially. So if it was a younger person, I would talk a lot about finances as well as developmental changes that might happen in their 20s and 30s. You know, they might start out with certain beliefs, but in that period, people sort of become adults. And I think that's why we might see a lot of people having kids later now. The women's movement, of course, moved that forward, and it's really great. So people can have kids whenever they want. But I think people are waiting because they're realizing that they have a greater opportunity when they're a little older to offer a little more to their kids, which isn't to say it's bad to have them young. It just takes a lot of planning.
And what type of planning?
I think financial planning, and also what people think in their 20s, they're sort of individuating, and they're coming into themselves, and they need to incorporate the relational in that. Like, what am I going to be, as well as what is my partner going to be, and what are my kids going to be in 10 years? Are we all going to be on the same page? And I think that can be, if people stop and think about that one, they might think a little further ahead.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't think you know yourself well enough in your 20s to partner and like, you know, get married, let alone have children and, you know, hope to raise them with the kind of values that you may end up wanting to raise them with later on in life, and think, you know, back, wow, I didn't even know who I really was in my 20s, you know. So it's just, yeah, the 20s is the new teens kind of thing. And I think people shouldn't be allowed to have children until they're 30. But then, of course, our biologically, we're most healthy time to have children is in our 20s. So big mismatch going on there.
Definitely.
Difficult questions. And in terms of sex and spirit, I think the development that happens in that 10-year period, just between 20 and 30, about people's personal sexuality and how they're going to express it, as well as how they their values around how their family values around sexuality should be. It's very young to start teaching around sexuality when you're also developing yourself. And it works if you figure it out together, and if you can develop a family platform to talk. But
Did you say?
Yes, teach sort of an appropriate languaging with kids of a certain age, depending on the family values, when it's time to start talking more detail about sex.
Well, we'll talk about that later on.
Okay.
Now you're talking to people about figuring out whether to have children.
Sure.
So let's talk about
this new
families that you call the new family. You talk about this on your website. Can you explain a little bit to the listeners what you mean by that?
Well, a new family, I think there's lots of terms. You know, you mentioned blended families and co-parenting and shared housing. And I think we're having enough changes in culture, especially sort of a return to community. I do want to back up for a moment and say that folks that have really strong religious values and religious upbringing, regardless of what they are, even though alternative culture very often poo-poos certain religious groups, those folks do stay married, and those kids do grow up in a lifestyle that supports the beliefs they have. And I think that's one of the things that's missing with a culture that's separate from spirit and not choosing one over the other. So I think that definitely needs to be integrated in the beginning. And that makes for lastingness. In terms of the new families that are developing, I think people who have taken spirituality out of their lives and the way that can hold a family together, shared values, if we just reduce it to shared values and shared ethics and the way you live your life, people can now bind together in shared houses and new relationships and new values and create whatever they would like to do. My partner is an educator around kids a lot, and we've been talking about pagan American Gothic being our working theme. You know, there is a new family out there, and you can create it in any way you wish. And I think there's a power there, and the blended families and co-families that are happening, they make me so excited because you can create your own family, and that's a powerful system. And if you do it correctly, it's so beneficial, I believe, to kids. So beneficial. And if you ask kids now, and there's so many divorced families now, so many will say that they so many that they love living in two places with four people, possibly bringing them up, or even more, depending. Hmm. And I think that there is a benefit there for kids if we really look at it and not focus on the negatives of breaking up, but the positives of new families that develop out of that.
I have to agree with you.
Hmm.
So as an aside,
We were talking earlier in terms of, I found it interesting that you brought up about religion and in terms of spirituality, binding people together in even severe religious groups. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with in BC, we've got the case against the Bountiful BC right now.
Oh, no, I'm not familiar at all.
Okay. It's basically...
It's a polygamous sect of religion. And so we were just going to say like...
Very Mormon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mormon... But the polygamous side.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
So we have a pretty big gathering of those community of those people in what's called Bountiful, which is just a small town in BC here.
Oh.
And there's a case against, you know, them having sex with marrying 14-year-olds and stuff like that. So that's an aside. So that's kind of a different family structure.
Yes, it is.
But I think that I have to agree with you. Some of the benefits of blended families, step family arrangements, where the children are raised by multiple parental figures, like you're saying, I think that the parents are happier, and that's a really big part of it. We were wondering, do you think that it makes the children more balanced or more mature by having multiple parent structures and multiple homes?
I think it depends on the kids and also the structure of the homes. If it seems really scattered to the kids and they feel chaotic and they feel like they're going back and forth, then I think that can be really negative in them. And they, you know, kids will tell you when they're feeling like they're overwhelmed with that. But when it's worked out, when families really work it out, when they separate and they're going to bring up kids in separate houses and share agreements and keep their values and their friendship in place, and their kids see parents getting along that are now divorced,
right,
that could be super powerful for a kid, because it can show that relationships can change as they do so many change, and that it's still okay, that love is still there, and they're totally safe.
Yeah, they can do that too. Like if there's a really big rift between them and some other relationship, that they know that even if the relationship goes bad or starts to fall apart, there can still be love. Eventually, you can work things out and
absolutely
all that. I think it's a very important lesson for sure.
It's a beautiful place for modeling. If you can really step up for your kids, not only will you get along with your ex better, but your kids will be happier. That's definite.
That's definitely a benefit for sure. I also think there's more potential for love. I mean, I came from a blended family on multiple sides and lots of divorces and remarriages and half-sisters and brothers. And, you know, I think there's a big potential for a lot of, like, a lot of love. Like, you just, you know, because you don't see each other as often, when you do, there's just a lot of positivity involved. And that was one of the benefits that I found as well for myself.
Mm-hmm. When I was a kid as well, I loved having four figures that I could spend time with instead of just two.
I like it better now, but I had a harder time back when I was younger, but it is definitely, I love the fact that I have, well, I love three of my four parents. But yeah, it makes for a more diverse life for sure. More rich.
Unfortunately, I can't speak to that. My parents were together for 25 years until my mom passed away, so I don't have any reference. I'm sorry, guys.
So, what is your experience then, Robert, of going from this free lifestyle, so you've had free adult relationships in your life, you know, you said you're 42, to one where you've just recently moved into a family setting where you've got an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old girl, is that right? Mm-hmm. What's your experience with that?
That what we know cognitively isn't what we know experientially. It's absolutely that after my head stops spinning around, which has only been recent, I've moved into a family for the past 3 months, and I plan to stay here, which is something I haven't said in the past. And I had a vasectomy, for example, when I was 21, because I knew I didn't want children.
I'm gonna
put that in quotes. Because it came up once around age 35. I thought, maybe I do. No, I had a vasectomy. I'm not going to. But I met someone who I fell in love with, who has awesome kids, and you were talking about that earlier. They not only... to be with her, needed to be with her kids, which was fine. I also had to move to California because she had parenting agreements with her ex to live near each other, which is awesome. that's great for the kids.
Yeah.
So I had a complete switch. I went from I lived in Seattle, and my relationships were very open. I taught polyamory classes in Seattle. I still do down here.
Wow.
And I could do anything I wanted, and I could travel and teach a class. I could do anything. And
by your choice, you didn't want to have children.
Right. And I actually
nothing
were talking
like
earlier.
Love to set your life on quite a different spin.
And
it was a choice
earlier.
You made when you're 21 in your 20s.
Right, exactly. I got a divorce when I was, I cannot remember, my 30s, because my ex-wife wanted children.
Mm-hmm.
So you never know what's going to happen in life. You never know.
Never know where love is going to blow into your heart and just take you a totally different aside. Yes.
Absolutely. Plus,
imagine.
The kids are magnificent. If you meet a partner that has new kids and you're open to them, you need to be open to the whole family. And if it works, there it is. That's the measurement. Are you open to the whole family? Because it is a whole family when you enter into a relationship.
You have to be open to the father, the biological father of the child, children as well.
I believe that personally, yes. Mm-hmm. I think it's really, really important. Because otherwise the differences that can be built up. And anyone that's involved in your kid's life, whether you're a step-parent or a bio-parent or in a blended family, it's good to know them.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you talked about setting boundaries with the girls. So as a man, how do you feel like about walking around without clothes on, not being their biological father, for example?
Well, for that, that's why I was talking about what cognitively and what experientially are different. I don't feel comfortable with that personally. I think that's a personal thing. Mm-hmm. And that's just me.
Because you're a very open person, obviously. You teach polyamory classes. Mm-hmm. You came from a poly community and very sexual. I mean, you teach about sex. You talk about sex a lot. I mean, the Robert Allen that I knew years ago, and I still have not had on the show, so I'm glad we're finally getting this together. But yeah, your life is completely different. And so I'm surprised. You seem like an open person, and like being naked is just a natural thing. So I think that's an interesting boundary.
I think it's a getting used to. That's what I'd have to add in, because I've been here 3 months. And
3 months.
The family here, they're California pagans. They're naked all the time, but since I got here, the girls have put clothes back on, and I think that's normative because they're young, they wonder about me, and I think that they'll gain comfort, and so will I. But I'm being very aware of their boundaries and sort of following them.
I think that's important. I mean, you're entering into an environment where there's the three women in the house: the 8-year-old, the 11-year-old, and the mother, and. And I think these girls are navigating some early puberty, and there's probably a lot of personal, shyness that they're kind of trying to figure out as well. And you're not their biological, you haven't seen them naked from the moment they were born kind of thing either. Mm-hmm. So, there's a lot of things. As a step-parent, I think the nudity in the home and the sex in the home are the two kind of areas where it's not often talked about, and it's something that I wanted to bring up on the show because it is a sex show. So what do you think about you and your partner having, your business time?
Business time. Well, I think, the Robert Frost says in the poem, good fences make good neighbors. I think it's the same as kids. We are not super sexual in front of them, but we're super loving. Super loving. Mm. And they know about sexuality. Their mother's a sex educator, and they've grown up with that. So I think that gives them a sense of boundaries as well. They know their boundaries, and we know ours. And I don't think that high eroticism or high sexuality is necessary in front of children. And so I don't even put it there, but the discussions are certainly there. The 11-year-old is going through early puberty, as girls are doing more and more these days.
Mm-hmm.
And so that topic is afoot and up. And also, my partner's also traditionally been polyamorous as well, so the kids can speak of polyamory, but they haven't really been, in terms of sexuality, that hasn't come into their vision yet in much detail, so there's no reason for us to bring it up. They know about sex, they know about how it works, they know about that whole deal, so when they want to ask about, you have multiple partners, do you have multiple sexual relationships with them, then that's the time to answer, but I don't think it's necessary to bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're young, that's a little developmentally ahead of their time.
Okay. Well, there's a couple of topics I wanted to talk about just in the last few minutes here. We're going to talk about, in a second, talking to youth and children about their sexual development. I think that's a good topic to get into. But you also recommended honesty and consistency with step-parenting and blended parenting. So how did you do this? And how did you do this when you first started? How do you do this now? How would you recommend to people about this? You recommend honesty and consistency, so...
I think honest and consistent, and most often, if they're at the developmental age and they're asking a question, I think it's good to answer them straight. And I see parents get, I've seen my peers in the past, and I'm new to parenting on this one, so I sometimes my head stops when they ask a question. I'm thinking, is that okay to answer?
Yeah.
And my view is the fact that they asked it makes it okay to answer. And the detail of that answer will be developed out of the conversation that we have around it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if it's highly, highly sexual, you know, I've heard parents say, are you comfortable with actually talking about that? And then I see the kids back away. It's like, no, we kind of brought it up. It's not time yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that checking in with the kid, is this the conversation you want to have? Do you mm-hmm. feel ready for this? And then having it.
Mm-hmm.
And especially around alternative lifestyle, because if you lie to your kids, and if you lie to your stepkids, and if you lie in blended parent families, they will know, and the trust will be shot. And
mm-hmm.
it doesn't work that way. So I think it's if you want to say something like you feel like it's time based on their age, that's one thing. But if they ask you, then I think that's also time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, there's lots of great books out there, too, on what's age-appropriate information.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And then, of course, that has to be also in line with your particular values as a parent or a step-parent, just, you know, what you feel comfortable talking about. But I think it's really important, Robert, and we did just mention this on our pre-interview, around not instilling more and more shame. There's already so much shame and embarrassment around
absolutely.
Sexuality that I think even if you are a bit embarrassed as a parent or you feel a bit shameful about your own, you know, body and sexuality and things like that, then maybe you're not the person to talk to.
I think that's a good point, that they'll yeah. notice your shame because they're looking at you as a model. Coming mm-hmm. into a family older at 42, I'm so aware when the kids are staring at me mm-hmm. trying to learn something.
Right.
Like, how are we going to act like Robert?
Yeah.
And that's what makes me nervous now, and of course the parents. So I think I have to represent the truth because they're paying
right.
attention.
Yes, they are paying attention. A friend of mine gave me the cutest example last night, that he is driving his young 5-year-old son and his friend in the back seat, and it was, you know, this friend of mine was hot, and he just like whipped his ball cap off and started shaking his hair, just getting some air in it, and he just, you know, was whatever driving, and he noticed like a few seconds later that both the boys whipped their hats off and started shaking their head and just like looking around like everything's normal, and it was just a normal thing to do. And he was just so shocked. I just gave him such a blast of like, oh my God, they're watching everything I do and modeling mm-hmm. me. And now they do that. And so be careful how you are. But I think, yeah, just being really, really true to yourself and, mm-hmm. and being confident, knowing that, you know, you're a good person or whatever.
And if you believe in your lifestyle, then mm-hmm. you believe in it, and you should represent that as what you believe.
Right.
Kids paying attention. That's my biggest message that I have learned as a new step parent. They are paying attention. I was having a conversation in a van just like that. It seems to be when it happens with my partner.
Mm.
And she mentioned that someone had cheated on her, quote unquote, and her 11-year-old daughter in the back said, "If you're polyamorous, how is there cheating?" Those are the kind of questions that kids ask. They pay attention to every word.
Yeah.
And that was a fun, long answer, though.
How did you answer that? Just curious.
She said there are levels of cheating, and her daughter said, yeah, whatever.
That was the extent of the conversation?
Okay. Oh, it went on later, but that was the initial one.
Right.
But it was about, you know, definitions of, you know, it went very long. It would take a whole show to talk about that one.
Mm-hmm. Well, just on the developmental stages of children question, many parents kind of already know this stuff because they get pregnant and they want to learn what to expect and how to deal with all the developmental stages. As a step parent coming in later, what do you recommend?
I recommend, I tend to be an active learner, both by reading and also by doing. And since I'm sort of thrown into the doing, I'm trying very hard to catch up on my developmental reading. I think there's a series of books called So Your Child is 5, Your Child is 6, Your Child is 7. And I think those are outstanding because mm-hmm. they just give the edges of what development looks like without a great deal of detail.
Mm-hmm.
And then asking the kids. I'm asking them as many questions they're asking me, and I'm also paying attention as closely to them as they're to me. We can read a lot of books, and we can go to parenting groups. That's all great. We can get ourselves clear on things personally through coaching or therapy or talking with friends or peer groups. But when it comes down to it, it's the actual experience of being with kids, because they'll teach you more than anything else can teach you.
Right.
So what's next for you, Robert?
Next, I've moved recently to rural California, so I have moved my work mostly from doing face-to-face groups or face-to-face coaching to online groups and teleclasses. classes, telecourses, and telecoaching. It's been quite a shift. And the next thing I'll be doing is a men's group called Unearthing the Divine Masculine. And it'll be about embodiment and mixed ideas in Tantra, pragmatism, and Western counseling. And so I do a lot of groups like that. I am also doing a thing called for Men. I've moved to a few men's groups just to try that out, called Mastering Sexual Communication. And it's about active listening, active paying attention, getting clear on personal boundaries before you inflict or show up with boundaries you're not sure of with another person.
We're definitely going to have you on for another show to talk about that. I know we're going to have you and Lacera on in a couple weeks to talk about sexuality and spiritual life, but I think we definitely need to book you for that because that sounds very interesting. Where can people find more information about you? What's your website?
My website is roguetantra.com, R-O-G-U-E. And it has all the classes, and by the end of the week, it will have many more. I'm teaming up with a number of tantrikas and tantra educators and also coaches to do so many things. I'm really excited. It's been a bit of a shift to come out to rural California, and I'm excited for all the new work and the way I'm going to be doing it.
Well, I think you have a lot of space to really focus because there's not a lot of busy social life that's pulling you this way and that way. You've got the forest and the trees that are
Cows and the horses.
And cows and horses that are going to help you stay focused.
And kids.
And kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone took a picture of me playing Monopoly yesterday. It blew my mind.
Well, like I said, love can pull you in all kinds of wonderful places. So.
They absolutely will.
That's wonderful. All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed tonight's show, and thank you so much, Robert.
And you're welcome.
We will have you on again in a couple of weeks with Lacera. We look forward to that.
Awesome.
And so thanks so much for calling.
Thank you for having me. You have a great night.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
So we hope you enjoyed tonight's show. Caroline and I are not going to be back next week because we're taking a break. Both of us have to be out of town. I'm going to teach, and you're going to Victoria for what?
Cancer Action Day, basically, to get the government to basically take a stand and to stop having people die of cancer because so many people do. So that's what I'm doing next week, and I'm really excited about it.
Cool. So we're both out of away. I'm sure there'll be some kind of fabulous rerun. But
hopefully our hair show.
Maybe our hair show. That was funny. That we should have been playing McLean and McLean's pubic hair song. I can't believe I didn't think of it.
Well, I don't know. The hair song, Give Me Down the Hair, was good.
I sing that song. I used to sing it.
Why don't you sing it now?
No.
Just
forget it.
10 seconds. No. Just entertain our viewers, our listeners.
Oh, my God.
Do it.
I've seen pubic hair, man. I never liked him there, man. Even got my share, man. Beneath my underwear, man. Sticking out here and there, man. I've seen pubic hair. Okay, whatever. That's all you're getting.
Anyway, on that note,
in the meantime, any recommendations, email us at
julia@juiceboxradio.com.
And coming up next is Hans von Kloss's Misery Hour. Marion is a very sexy man to be miserable with. What shoes are you wearing tonight, Marion?
He's got very good shoes. It encourages our shoe fetish.
Tune into Juicebox Radio every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock.
I am doing it whenever I can.
Sticking out here and there, man.
I love that song. We got to get him to play it later.
You just experienced Juicebox Radio, a show dedicated to developing your relational and individual sexual health, expressing diversity, celebrating queerness, and encouraging pleasure at all stages. Be sure to tune into Juicebox every Wednesday night at 10. In the meantime, you can check out juiceboxradio.com. Thanks for listening.